I mean, when we were opening Whale, you know, Dan and I were spending like 20 hours a day in that space just Gross. Doing things and talking and, you know, game planning and trying to like just attack this new venture as best we can. And we were talking about the idea of like eventually we're going to have to tell someone that we're doing this. And I think, you know, we've been in the industry forever, so a lot of people already kind of knew, but like we have to tell that to someone, and then that someone's going to tell it to a bunch of people, and then like we have to make sure that we land in a good area. And one of the first things that Dan and I had talked about was like, we are going to do as best we can to never say the words craft cocktail ever, because
interviews.
I think at that time it was still like at the tail end of, you know, like maybe this craft cocktail thing is going to be pretentious, or this new thing is going to be snooty or only for date nights or whatever.
Or this exclusive club where it's like, oh, you're ordering that drink, you simpleton.
Yeah, exactly.
We always wanted to be a neighborhood bar. So like for us, we wanted to, you know, diffuse any possibilities of, you know, turning people off before they ever walked in our door.
Which to like our detriment, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, so we could have opened a bakery and people would have been talking about craft cocktails, because that's what we did. You know, like that's,
we fought as,
that's
as
what
best
we did.
We could,
yeah.
And it was a battle that was lost within the first 90 days of us being open.
Because everyone was like, you're the craft cocktail dudes from this place and this place.
Yeah.
And we're like,
Yes, that's us.
Yeah.
But then luckily, you know, we put a cocktail in a jolly good soda can, and people can kind of realize right away that we're not really pretentious. I'll always have a sweater on, and then you just keep going.
You'll find me in a baseball cap and a hoodie behind the bar. Yeah. You know, we don't take ourselves seriously. Well, we may take our craft seriously, we don't take ourselves seriously, which is find the best way to do anything these days.
Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to Food Crushed, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. As always, I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at On Milwaukee, and I am joined by Lori Frederick, food writer at On Milwaukee, as well as aspiring Disney lyricist. How are you doing, Lori?
I don't know how to respond to that.
For those who don't know, and you don't because we weren't recording, me and Lori and our two very special guests, we were talking about Frozen and Frozen 2, and Lori decided to write her own little Disney theme song.
I did. I'm not going to sing it for you.
It's not appropriate.
We
want to save our F words and swear words.
SFW.
A little deeper into the podcast, you know.
Definitely.
How are you doing, Lori?
Doing pretty well.
That's good.
Pretty well. Yeah. I haven't eaten today.
Yeah, I brought food, but only for myself.
So if you hear a really low growling sound.
That's our new co-host, Lori's hungry stomach. Yeah.
That's why,
Throwing a commercial.
We do actually have, besides your hungry stomach, we do have two very special guests on this podcast. Lori, would you like to introduce them?
I would love to introduce them. We have the dudes from Lost Whale, and that means Daniel Barris. Or Berez, if you prefer.
Beers, berries.
Mm-hmm. Important
Daniel,
note. But
Daniel Berries, yeah.
Depending
that one's
on what decade
one.
And what age I was, it just transformed.
Important to note, before we started recording this podcast, you spent a minute talking about how like you would like to formally address them, and now you just called them the dudes from Lost Whale.
I did.
We were like, we'll go formal.
It.
We'll go super formal.
Super formal.
Yeah, what would you want to be called? It's the dudes who run the restaurant, whatever. I love you, Lori, so much.
Getting back. To the point. So we are here with our esteemed guests, Daniel Barris.
Barris.
Yep. And Trip Duval.
Mm.
The owners of Lost Whale in Bayview.
Yeah. Hello.
We're here.
Thanks. I did purposely try to not laugh or say anything until I was introduced because we didn't say it yet, but I'm a big fan of your guys' podcast.
Oh, thank you.
And I've listened to you try to bait people all the time just speaking before the introduction. And I was like, not fucking doing it. I'm not doing it.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. I failed immediately.
We got Dan hard.
Yeah. I was laughing to myself
right
the whole time.
I like you, Trip.
Fell right into my trap.
Wow.
Unlike Matt, I don't like to confuse people.
Speaking of confusion, Frozen 2.
Right off the bat.
Yeah, we should probably contextualize that.
Yeah, so we were having a long conversation because you are a father. You are both fathers?
No.
I'm one father.
I have a bunch
two
of
children.
Degenerates, bartenders, so that's pretty much it. Yeah, at this point. Yeah.
So you've seen Frozen then. and we were talking a little bit of Frozen 2, and I needed to ask, what do you think is the best song in Frozen 2?
Oh,
right,
man.
On the spot, right on the spot.
Oh, man.
There is a correct answer. I know.
Because Trip's answer is none of them at this point.
You ever heard the song Panda from Life of Pets. No, I'm just kidding. It's Kevin Hart rapping, and my daughter loves it.
I've
Anyways,
seen that movie, and I thought I actually like was drugged
first
when that moment happened.
Of the day, by the way.
the movie like ends with him just rapping about pandas for no reason, and you're just like, I am high.
Every time it comes out, my daughter like her eyes get huge, and then she starts like rocking out. I was like, if that's twerking, stop it. No, when we saw the movie, we saw it in the theaters, and I think maybe it was Into the Unknown was probably the one I was like, oh yeah, sure. That's okay. The next hit, right?
Yeah.
And then the Christoph song.
Yes.
The Woods song.
Lost in the Woods.
Yeah, Lost in the Woods.
That is
during
the
movie.
Answer.
Yeah. During the movie when I saw it, I was like, fuck this song. Like, this is the weirdest moment. None of this makes any sense.
Context. The song is utterly removed from the plot.
Yeah.
And it is just
none of it. Yeah. It makes any sense whatsoever.
It's Christoph like singing about how he's lost in the woods and he's sad because he doesn't
know
what the relationship.
It's like an 80s ballad. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
An 80s ballad sung by his reindeer,
yeah,
who have never talked before. And now all of a sudden are an 80s power ballad band. And it's the best.
Yeah. So when I saw the movie, I was like, fuck this song. And then as we've been listening and watching to it, or watching it every day, it's my new favorite song. We go to that one first now.
I'm glad we can continue this podcast. Because if you had said a different song.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We're out of here. I think
we've covered all the bases.
All of the mystery solved.
Thanks only to Dan for joining us on the podcast.
Hey.
If only there was a second guy here, but he said stupid things.
He's waiting outside.
Yeah. Well, since you gave the right answer, we can now continue talking about, not even
oh,
continue,
thank God.
Start
yeah.
talking about food. Lori, I'm so sorry I hijacked your podcast.
Not necessarily food. We're talking about bars here.
Bars and drinks.
Because
and
it is actually bar month.
Oh, snap.
What is
a bar but a restaurant for the drinking palate?
Liquid.
For the liquid.
Liquid
lunches.
Sustenance.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, so let's talk about how you guys got into this realm of the bartending type
thing.
So we'll start with you since, you know, we talked about Frozen already. Trip, right?
I got my 15 minutes of fame.
You got, like, you're done.
Yeah.
Like,
is this the career you dreamed of when you were, you know?
You know, what's funny is it depends on when you ask me that. When I was a teenager, I thought I was going to be a touring musician my whole life. I had a management deal in, you know, California and LA for a while.
What'd you play?
I played guitar. I was in a pop punk band in like the early aughts, if you will, and ended up getting...
What's the name of this band?
You're going to have to dig for yourself and figure that one out.
Well, I was really hoping you'd say it.
Not there.
Yeah. Matt's Googling
it. It's going to take him 4 seconds. But
what's your name?
It's Berries. R-R-I-E-S is how you spell it. last name. Yeah, and then we ended up getting like a record deal overseas, and we were literally the joke of like the like... I'm huge in Japan because we like literally had a record deal in Japan, and
That's the kind of band.
Lived in California for a little bit, you know, going back and forth a lot, and then in my like early 20s, you know, band broke up as they do, and I remember when we were touring and like when I was old enough to drink, I got to the point where I was like, you know, I was seeing cocktail bars kind of become like a thing in other parts of the country, and it hadn't really hit here yet. And I remember like getting like a really well-made drink like somewhere on the East Coast and just being like, man, these guys know what they're doing. Like, this is cool. And, you know, once I got out of music, was like, man, you know, bartending always seemed like it would be something really fun to do. Like, it's a different stage. You're still in front of people. Once I learned about, you know, craft cocktails and stuff, I was like, oh, I can still be creative. I can use that muscle in my brain still. So basically, I moved back to Milwaukee and moved in with a friend who you may know, Tom Dufek, who owns Plain Spoke Cocktails now and was one of the merchant dudes in Madison, and begged him to get me a job at the Hi-Hat Lounge. This is over a decade ago.
Yeah, this was back when there were good bartenders at Hi-Hat.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not gonna diss them now.
But
when there were less craft cocktail bars.
It was more of their focus, right? Now they're like, hey, we're busy all the time. We need to put out stuff faster. No one cares about your mustachioed bartender and suspenders. and they pivoted, and I think they pivoted in the way that they needed to for where their neighborhood
is. Crowd.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But like, so yeah, Tom was working there at the time, and his brother Dan, who now is the mixologist for Breakthrough, which is funny because now we're all in this business together doing different things. Worked the door, worked my way up to a bar back, and then became a bartender, and then it kind of just went from there, you know, moved to the Iron Horse and
you worked the doors because you were so big and thriving.
I was looking so tough that they were like, hey, you weigh 135 pounds soaking wet. If you could put on a tie and a vest to make you weigh a little bit more and sit at the door and just politely ask people for their IDs, that would be great.
Tie and a vest, famously, the uniform of badasses.
That was the uniform for the door. And it's funny because I always used to get like, I felt good, like dressing up, right? Like, yeah, just do that thing.
Look good, feel good.
But then the door person working for the garage, like literally the next door down, was looking like I look now, with just like jeans and a baseball cap on, and like, you know, also probably didn't shower that day, like me. and would always just be like, man, it must suck to just have to put all that on and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I dig it. It's fun. And then finally, when I started bartending, I was like, okay, it feels better wearing this whole getup, being behind the bar. But as time went on, I just kind of really wanted to push, you know, and you know, learn and get as educated as I could. And then, worked for the Bitter Cube Boys for a while, became a beverage director. Well, did some consulting for a bit and then became a beverage director for a hospitality group here in town. And then finally, the opportunity came up where I met this jag bag over here and got to open a bar. and just kind of like a slow, steady progression of like when I learned what I needed to learn and I was ready for the next step, I was lucky enough, you know, to have the opportunity to take them. So I think it was the right progression instead of, you know, of course I would have loved to own a bar when I was 29. That would have been great, right? But then I would have been closed in less than a year. It's been like, what do you mean, taxes?
You really didn't want to own a bar.
What was that? You,
people only think they want to own things.
It's crazy. That's a constant
like only
joke.
A few people in the world really should own things.
Yeah.
Before they've done a whole bunch of other things.
Exactly. All around, only a few select people should actually own things. Everyone else should.
At a younger age. I feel like some people are equipped for that. Like their brains are built and they're very business oriented. Yeah. And then there's a lot of people who make a lot of mistakes. Trying to own things prematurely.
Yeah. And I think in this industry, it's really easy to be a good bartender and then think to yourself like, I need to own my own bar. Like that's the next step. Yeah. And then you do it and you're like, there's so much shit that I have no idea about.
Oh man.
That
it's like whenever you tell a joke and someone's like, you should be a stand-up comedian. It's just like, it's a very big difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Throwing a joke out there and actually writing up a 10, 15 minutes set. There's a lot more science to it than just showing up and being funny.
When I would cook for people, which I still do occasionally, but not as often.
And you're like,
you should totally open a restaurant. I'm like,
isn't that the craziest thing like of all time?
Yeah.
I mean, people tell you these things.
You cook and you're like, you should open a restaurant. You're like, what? Why would you say that?
Yeah.
That's an insane leap.
Yeah.
You're in my house and then you want me to own a business. And it's insane.
Yeah.
There's a whole middle ground.
You don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the bar side, I think we always make the joke where like we say, you know, being a bartender and like making a good cocktail is like 1% of what it takes to be a bar owner. Like it's such a small portion of everything else that you do. Like it's unreal and you don't know it until you're in it. And then
the bartender part is the fun part.
Yeah, that's the only time I get to be social.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, how about you?
Yeah, Trent, how did you get to bartending?
When I was, I don't know, maybe early or mid 20s, something like that, I was working in my stepdad's heating and air conditioning business. And it was a good paying job out of high school and all that stuff. I dropped out of college and just needed to make money. And I had kind of hit the end of my rope with that career. It just wasn't for me, didn't fit with my kind of personality and who I am. And so I decided to just go back to school and finish my degree in music, which panned out really, really well.
What did you do musically?
I played the drums. I wanted my goal when
the
I started
name
playing
of the
music.
Band?
No way. No, my goal when
to
I started
Google.
Playing music
were,
was to be
were
a,
huge in Japan.
They were playing for like 10 people. It's great.
My goal was to be a middle school band director. I thought that was going to be like what I wanted to do with my life. And then so I was like, I'm going to leave this career I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to fucking do the thing I set out to do. And then in the interim, I was like, well, I got to make money. I got to need to make enough to pay my rent and put myself through school because no one was going to help me and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, I'll just bartend. Like, I love people. I love social situations. Matt Curley actually was like, hey, there's this place called the Hamilton. If you're going to go work somewhere, you should work there. It's a really cool place. There's good people doing good things. And I was like, do I have to break up fights or clean up puke? And he's like, probably not. And I was like, that sounds like the job for me.
That was a pretty good decision.
Yeah. So then I applied there, and luckily, timing wise, it just worked out. And Kim gave a guy who had no experience a shot, and I fucking fell in love with it immediately. I loved the creativity. I loved the interaction with people, and I became obsessed and just didn't stop. Learned and made and drank and did a ton of stuff, and then. Yeah, I guess the rest is history. I bounced around a couple different places, worked at Good Kind, and then I got a job with a local distributor. I worked for Badger Liquor for like 2.5 years. Yeah, and
I found that in my research. I didn't find your band. So.
That's probably a good thing.
He wiped the internet better than you.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah.
To follow that up. Truth and fiction.
Yeah, there you go. There it was. Funny thing, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, our bass player was the guitar player for Citizen King, Christian Riley, who's still a homie. You know,
actually, he's still making music.
He's still making music. He's in California now. He has his own record label, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah. Old Man Malcolm, all those guys.
Found an article. You guys are playing tonight at 6 p.m. at the Miramar. Mm-hmm. If this was September 5th, 2009.
Yep, there you go. Right. There you go.
Make sure
11 years ago, guys.
At the Miramar. Yeah. Back when people played at the Miramar.
Oh, man.
All American Rejects esque emo pop.
That's a very nice way to put it. Wow. Whoever wrote that, thank you.
So we've talked a little bit about how insane it is, the idea of owning a bar. So how did you guys team up and decide that that's an insane idea you guys wanted to do?
You know, what's funny is we met each other years before we actually became friends and didn't realize it until after we started hanging out. When he was at the Hamilton, I was still working for Bittercube, and that was one of our like places we consulted for, like helped open that place, did that thing. And, Trip came in just as our contract had ended, and we were done. They were set up. They had their foundation. Kim was, you know, rocking it. And I lived literally right next door to the Hamilton. I lived in a upper part of a two unit thing, and came back from like an event in Chicago or something that I was working, and got home late. It was like 11:30 at night. Had a long day and was like, I need a drink. I need a good drink. And I just happen to live next to a place that does good drinks. So I'm just going to walk downstairs and go next door.
Unlike, as we were talking before, when you live next door to Buckley's and never went there.
I live next door. I live three blocks away. And I'm a horrible human being.
I
lived there. Yeah, where I literally could have been to Buckley's like every other week. And it's like one of my favorite places, and made it like three times in the entire 2.5 years I lived four blocks down the road.
And now you travel across the city.
Now I travel across the city to go get their fantastic food and drinks more than when I lived closer to them.
Which I don't think anyone does.
I'm trying hard, guys. I'm trying to make up for all the not going before.
Isn't that how it works, though? Like, it's like the Netflix thing where you have this whole website full of movies to watch, and you're like, I'll watch
them
some other
time.
Yeah.
What is close to you is not.
Yeah, the accessibility makes it less appealing to you, because you're it'll always be there.
At least at this point, when I was younger, I made more of an effort, obviously. So I went next door to the Hamilton, I got a drink, and this dude was behind the bar, and we had not met yet. We didn't know each other. We probably knew of each other, but we had not formally met. And I ordered a drink off the menu, and he was like, the way he tells the story is fantastic, because it was not my experience, but through his eyes it's hilarious, because I didn't really know who he was. He knew who I was because he basically did all the Bittercube manual stuff that was left over after we left. And he's like, that's that fucking douchebag barbecue guy. And
word for word, that's what it was.
Yeah. So then I ordered a drink. I loved it. It was like a rum cocktail daiquiri riff of some sort.
It was a daiquiri.
There you go. I still remember. That's good. He goes, he's like, how's your drink? And I'm like, it's awesome, man. It's really well balanced. Like, it's delicious. Thank you so much. It's exactly what I needed after a long day. And he apparently in his brain walked away and was like,
I did it.
Like, just that's right, motherfucker. Yeah. Damn right, you liked
that
it.
That was the right answer.
Yeah. And then basically, like, years later, after I'd been working with the Standy Drink guys, you know, doing Hotel Madrid and Movida and their spots, this guy was working for Badger, and we just kind of connected through a bunch of events and stuff that we were doing together, became closer friends. It's traveling together, went to Mexico together, like, hey girl, for work, picked out a barrel of tequila, did that whole thing. Then he had a fantastic idea for a bar that was brewing in his brain for like years, and approached me and was like, I want to do this thing. The Boone and Cracker guys are moving. I think I can get into that space. What do you think? And I was like, I will help you in any way I can as a friend. I will consult. I'll do whatever. I got a pretty good gig here. Like, these guys are taking pretty good care of me. Like, I'm good. And then the further down the line he got, he was like, I think I'm going to need like someone like more vested, like day to day, like partner wise, blah, blah, blah. And then
he has to set aside time to watch Frozen.
That's true. With his daughter. Yeah.
300 times.
And if anyone knows, you know, he worked his magic, and I was like, yes, I will. Yeah, absolutely. Where do I sign? How much money do I have to give you? I'm in. just gave him my life. Yeah, exactly. And now we're business partners, and I'm sure I missed a million things. And if you have anything you want
to
add.
And you guys seem to do remarkably well. Like, going into being friends, knowing each other,
huge.
Liking each other, admiring each other, can turn sort of bad.
I talk about that all the time because, like, I talk about it all the time because, you know, when the opportunity to open this concept that I'd have been thinking about for a really long time came up, I was like, well, from my experience, it's always kind of best to like have one or maybe two people to like help run the business bar or whatever. And I already had a kid at that point. So I was like, as Dan said, as I got more invested, I was like, well, I'm going to just pick or talk to someone or whatever, like the best version of person that I can find. Like, they always say, like, surround yourself with people who are better than you. And in my mind, I had like a top three list of people who were I thought were better than me. And he was on that list.
Thankfully, the first two said no. So, yeah, I got lucky.
And so I just talk about it all the time. And I was excited about doing it. And so I called him because we had been doing a lot of work together at that time. And I was like, I think I'm going to leave my job and just take this leap and whatever. And his level of excitement was like through the roof. And like, that's the people you want in your corner. Like, yes. It's a lot of work and you need people to help be there for you and be excited and share in that excitement. And when I finally like kind of brought it up to him and he said yes and went on the path, there could have been 1,000 different times in the year and a half we've been open that, you know, we could have very easily, had we been different people, closed the business or, you know, had an arguing, yelling match or whatever it is. And for whatever reason, like miraculously without a lot of notion ahead of time, like we are a yin and a yang type of situation that really worked out perfectly that it should just never worked out that way.
Yeah. I honestly, not to get too, you know, bromancy and gooey over here. I think it just all boils down to
people can't see that we're holding hands right now.
We are definitely holding hands under the table.
This is a Valentine's Day podcast.
Hey,
yeah.
for us industry people that didn't get to do it over the weekend. It just comes out from our friendship and our respect for one another. I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, we never ever want to say or do anything that we can't, you know, come back from. And what we've built is way too important. And our friendship's more important than anything else. So I think at you know, the root of
which is surprising probably to everyone around you who's like, those guys are just such jerks all the time.
Yes.
I don't know how they stop from killing each other.
we said that thing, you know, off recording beforehand where we're like, we get to hear every other week who we apparently have beef with. Yeah. Like, we make that joke where we're like, I don't even know that person. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But, it's, it's weird. Like for us, I think, from the outside, I don't think people understood how close we got in such a short period of time outside of the business, like becoming friends, like working together before we opened the business together. And, had we not had that friendship,
I was very concerned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good.
I was like, this is moving much too quickly. Boys. Yeah. Like, do not do it. It's going to burn.
It's like, it's going to look like a real relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Too much too fast. Like, already, 3 months. Okay, buddy. Yeah.
but sometimes you just know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, find out. Yeah, you find out real quick.
This podcast is going to be harrowing in 5 years to listen to. Yeah. Just like, oh, they were so young.
Yeah, exactly.
They were so cute. Yeah. They went to Mexico together.
Dan lives in Amsterdam now. Yeah.
They haven't spoken in 7 years.
Yeah, the
building was burned down.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Truly scorched earth. Speaking of the building, something I find interesting about Lost Whale is that you guys moved into a space that was previously Boone and Crockett, which built a very big audience.
Popular, kind of an iconic space.
It was terrifying.
Yeah. Was it better or worse to move into a place that had such a footprint for that moment?
I think we got really lucky because the foot traffic was built in. Mm-hmm. So we did end up getting a lot of people that, we still get it today where people walk in, they look around, and all they say is, where's the taco truck?
Yeah.
still to this day.
Literally put on we have an outdoor like A-frame sign that we have happy hour on there if we have any specials that we want to get out as people are walking by on the sidewalk. And I, as a joke for like 2 weeks, I put out, yes, we have a patio. No, there is no taco truck on it. Yeah. and took a picture, put it on Instagram and tagged John and Mitch in it. And they text me and were like, that's hilarious. I was like, yep. Every other day, basically at this point, especially in the first year, it was a thing. Yeah.
And I think, so the built-in foot traffic was nice. When I was talking with John about doing it, you know, he kind of was like the biggest player in making sure that whatever was going to end up in that space was going to be something that the neighborhood needed, and it kind of filled a void. And, you know, I had been, I think, drunk probably in my underwear in a pool in New Orleans with him and a bunch of other guys from the city, and had been like drunkenly telling him about Lost Whale or something like that. And so to get another cocktail bar in that space was an important thing. And then it's terrifying for me, like coming from a job that you're making really good money and you've never owned your own business before and all that stuff, to put something that's fairly similar into the same spot of, I mean, Boone and Crockett is still one of my favorite bars of all time. I used to go there 3-4 times a week before they moved. And then to have me open a business there was like, what the fuck am I doing? Why did I think this was a good idea? I'm like, my kids aren't going to be able to go to school.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to just go bankrupt. And then luckily, like, we were so far apart atmosphere-wise that I think people were able to kind of like forget that Boone was even there after a little while. And then still,
even if they stumbled in, didn't look up at the sign,
no,
thought they were at Boone and Crockett, once they got in, they were like, oh, we like what you've done with this.
Yeah. We've gotten it is remodeling.
And it is whiplashy. I mean, it went from being this really masculine,
dark,
lodgy, not really Northwoods, but Boone and Crockett.
We always like to make the joke. Yeah.
Environment to this like beautifully like, I don't know, there's like a lot of female flourish in the... Who knew?
Yeah. A couple of weird guys.
It's kind of
also my mom helped a lot.
A lot. Yeah. It's a real thing. We always make the joke that we fast forwarded just 100 years in the design of the concept. Because like they had the very like, you know, 1860s, like, you know,
rugged outdoors,
you know, taxidermy on the wall, that type of thing. And then we were like, we're going mid-century modern. Like we're like, what if a tiki bar was like somewhere in the Great Lakes, but we're not gonna be a tiki bar, but we wanted to kind of just have a water kind of nautical feel, like adjacent thing to it. And then it just, the color palette that like Rev Pop, who did our branding work for us, who crushed it and did a fantastic job.
They crush everything they do.
Let's be real.
Yeah.
This is not a Rev Pop podcast.
Scott, if you're listening, thank you. Just the way that worked out and like, with everything, how it came together, and like as we're piecing together, you know, decor and getting furniture in, and like those lounge chairs that we have, the blue ones are actual, like they're from this late 60s, early 70s. They were, I forget the hotel, but they were donated by a hotel in Waukesha to the Habitat Humanity Restore out there. And I found them and like bought them all in like one day and was like, I'll take all of those. And the guy was like, are you sure? And I was like, yep. Ring them up. Let's go. And like we took them. So like so certain things just kind of magically came together. And then it just kind of brought that feel like more a feminine kind of thing that like we didn't really envision.
It's
it just kind of came together. Yeah.
And in comparison to Boone.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's so different.
Like Boone could marry Lost Whale.
Yeah.
And it would be amazingly. It would
John
be a bizarre,
Mitch, if you're listening, let's do something crazy.
somewhat of a bizarre couple. But, yeah. You know, definitely.
Yeah.
So give me the pitch. Like how did you pitch Dan? I'm talking to you, Trip.
Oh yeah.
On your concept, this concept that had been floating around in your head. What was it?
Oh man, that story's so good.
I don't really know. I don't remember.
Well, you pitched me the whole, you know,
Lost Whale's been in my head for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it stemmed from this April Fool's article that I had read years and years and years ago that like had me
filmed the whole thing.
Like crying, laughing because the concept was so simple, but it was the first time I'd ever heard it. And that's the sort of like idea that I get really excited about is like you have this blanket thing. And it's just been in front of you the whole time. And that was kind of like what this article was.
And this was a whale.
It's just whales being lost. And it ended up in Lake Michigan. And like all of a sudden now people are whale watching in Lake Michigan. And it really resonated because a friend of mine is a tattoo artist from, lived in Europe. And he came to visit us. My buddy owns Goodland Tattoo Shop. So he came to do a pop-up spot there and he took him to the lake and he was telling me, like laughing about how his friend saw Lake Michigan and thought it was the ocean because it's so expansive.
So big.
Yeah. And we live on this beautiful Great Lake and no one ever talks about it in that way. So I just was like, it just all kind of clicked at once. And then was telling this to Dan. I was like, I think I'm going to take over John's space. I'm going to put this like weird tiki bar idea I have in there. I had another idea, but it just didn't fit for the space.
What was that other idea?
I see what you're trying to do and I don't like it. No, I'm kidding. It was like a tombstone cowboy type of vibe.
It was a pizza bar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Based exclusively on the 1990s Western tombstone.
Oh man. It strictly sells cheap beer and frozen pizzas. Yeah.
Honestly, that's a dumb part. That was
probably vaguely too close, though, to the Boone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just look wise. Like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And plus, like, again, I'm hugely in love with Lake Michigan. And I think until Third Coast, there was really not many places that celebrated it, you know, mm-hmm. or at least like people are traveling and writing and learning about Milwaukee. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's a big lake. It's cool.
There's like a weird embarrassment about Lake Michigan.
Which is insane to me.
I think we've read so many stories about like the pollution in Lake Michigan and stuff that we kind of have inverse to the point that we're like, oh, yeah, that's just a big cesspool over there.
Don't go swimming.
Everyone else looks at it, it's just like, wow, what a gem of a natural landmark you have. Well, and we're just like, it's our toilet.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and all these people who've lived near water and especially oceans. I mean, I worked at Marquette for a long time and students who were from California or who lived on the East Coast didn't even think about it. But when they came to Milwaukee, their biggest problem was they could not tell the direction.
Yeah.
Based on where the lake was.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
I mean, we all know that the lake is east.
East, yeah.
But, you know, they came from places right now, where maybe the ocean was, you know.
That's bizarre.
The west. Like, so it would throw people off from that. But it was kind of like that grounded them. And they're like, it's so beautiful. Like, it's so amazing. Beautiful.
It's like being a surfing at home. Culture in Wisconsin. Yeah. Like, I think it's Sheboygan or Stevens
Sheboygan.
Yeah. There's like a large surfing contingent. And there's, we've taken it so much for granted.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that, you know, places are starting to embrace the lake again.
Yeah, so like the idea of like, you know, the escapism of a tiki bar and like kind of how historically speaking they kind of came to be was something that really intrigued me. And then so we can't, in my opinion, I can't do a tiki bar because we're not, you know, we're not there. We weren't there, you know, there's a whole lot of other issues and whatever. And then it was like, so how do we open a water-themed bar in Milwaukee that, you know, will celebrate that, but then also just not be known as a tiki bar or any of that stuff? So I'm like spewing all of this information at Dan. And Dan's like, I'm super excited. That's incredible. Like, I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, by the way, can you help me?
I think it was big.
Not that I drew you in with idea.
The conversation turned into a pitch on a dime.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the idea of the vibe and like something nautical, but also not being tied to just tiki cocktails and that like whole thing. So like the fact that we didn't feel like we were going to end up being pigeonholed where we only could do tiki drinks and fancy mugs and like these things was exciting to me. Cause I was like, oh wow, I don't feel anything about me, but we really like control. So like being able to control ourselves, like in everything that we do, like, and not have to stay in one lane was like such a, you know, exciting thing for us, I think, in the very beginning. So I was like, I'm on board. Sign me up. Yeah.
And for people hoping that they'll find, you know, all of these classic tiki drinks.
Probably not.
No.
You know. No.
Yeah. Can we make you a Mai Tai?
Yeah.
Sure.
Will it be great? Most likely. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. We do our job, right? Yeah.
But if, like, if you look at the color scheme and all that stuff, yeah, I mean, it's like washed white and like copper orange and
teal.
And like a teal blue and all that stuff. Like our wallpaper is very wavy like.
Well, it's
reminiscent of a lot of the things.
It's, no, that was
never actually lands on it.
I almost kicked you under the table for saying wallpaper.
Did I say wallpaper?
You did say wallpaper.
Son of a
bitch.
Yeah, you need more coffee.
I'll go. It's cool.
Just totally took the wind out of Colleen Drew's sails right there.
So, yeah, she's amazing.
She's amazing.
Yeah,
it's like wallpaper.
Yeah, exactly.
Drew art painting.
Even to the owner.
Yeah, she's fantastic. But that design on our walls was custom and done for us and took 9 tries to get the color.
Yeah, I was
that we
a real
wanted,
asshole
right?
about it.
Yeah, but it was for good reason. You know, when it was there, we knew it. And when it wasn't, we never felt right about it. And sometimes you just got to take that extra time and make sure it's right and spend the money where it needs to be spent. So,
well, especially with something like a bar where it's like, this may be our only chance to do this.
Yeah.
So we might as well do it exactly the way we want to do it.
It's very
instead
point.
Of like let's not half measure something. Cause if we go bankrupt, if this is it, like we'll be kicking ourselves forever for not being exactly what we envisioned.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Of course, man. You did great. That's good job. Yeah.
Masterful questions, really. Yeah. Anyways, well, back to Frozen, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
So how did you guys go about then? We've talked about the atmosphere at Lost Whale. How did you go about kind of making that menu and figuring out that idea of, you know, this tiki vibe, but without being tiki bar, tiki drinks, like kind of figuring out that vibe and that blending these ideas together?
Yeah, so I think the idea originally that we had kind of talked about was, you know, it's less maybe tiki, but more about like this you know, whimsical kind of thing, and then also drinks from old, right? So like the Harvey Wallbanger that's on our menu that will never go away was a thing that we talked about originally, and was just like, you know, are we really going to open a bar and put a Harvey Wallbanger on it? And we're like, fuck yeah, we are. Like,
why not? We're put it on tap.
Yeah, exactly.
which is funny because I saw that and it immediately reminded me of my friend Steph, and who I think grew up, I'm going to get this story wrong for her, but grew up maybe drinking Harvey Wallbangers, and we'd go to bars. And you know how when you turn 21, I think the drinks you know are the drinks maybe that your parents drank. Like when
you go
up to a bar,
you have no experience.
You have like paralysis.
Yeah.
And unless you like, a lot of people just like order a beer. I started drinking gin and tonics because it just sounded cool.
Yeah.
I don't
exactly.
know.
That's why my,
like,
on my
and I could say gin and tonic like, and they knew what I meant and they didn't ask me too many questions.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they asked me which gin I wanted, but like,
for sure.
I had my worst nightmare
but
realized.
She would order Harvey Wallbangers, which even then, I mean, I'm old, but was, you know, and bartenders would look at her and go, how do you make that?
Yeah.
And sometimes she'd make the mistake of like kind of telling them. which, you know, it's kind of like, ounces, I always think like now if the bartender doesn't know how to make that drink, let's just order something he knows how to make.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I would laugh because I'm just like, I knew what it was, but I also maybe teased her that it was, you know, like, you're drinking a grandpa drink. Like, what is that?
I will not say where I was bartending at the time, but I was bartending, outside on like a patio thing for an event, and someone came up and asked a bartender that I was working with for a Tom Collins, and they had the same moment, and they're like, I don't know how to make that. And the guy was like, it's a pretty easy drink. And then the bartender walked by me and was like bringing in something into the POS and was like, this guy is for Tom Collins. Was this 1970? Get this guy, oh, cool, Tom Collins. He like got all angry about it. And I was like, I think you should probably know how to make that. I just was like kind of a dick, you know? I was like, I think that's probably something you should know how to do. Yeah, but it's, yeah. Well,
there is this kind of, and maybe tell me if I'm wrong about this, but there did seem to be a vibe with cocktails that the old stuff was so unhip. That like, oh, if you order a drink like that, like, oh, Jesus, like, what are you, my dad? And now there seems to be this idea of like, no, like, let's bring back some of these older drinks.
Yeah.
Let's bring back some of these classics. It's almost like a move away from some of the kind of pretension that people have in mind when they think of like a cocktail bar, like we were joking about, you know, the mustache and the
suspenders. It gets brought up every time people talk about craft cocktails. It's like, oh, I don't, those mustaches, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, for, I mean, his, like, at least in my experience with bartenders and people that I know from around the country, like when the craft cocktail renaissance, if that's what you want to call it, happened, you know, it was like, oh, you don't know what a traditional old fashioned is, and you've been from Wisconsin your whole life, so you have no reason to know what that is. Like, fuck you.
Right.
And then, you know, you go through all of pre-prohibition and then, you know, prohibition, and then you only focus on those drinks, and everyone forgets that, like, there was like another
4 or 5 decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 60 years in between there that also had drinks that. The only difference back then was it was all, you know, processed and bottled and meant to be shelf stable because we all thought we were going to die and whatever. And well, so, and what happens was, if you take those ideas and make
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, people thought that was cool. I mean, drinks, we're back to probably as good, like the drinks were good. The bartenders were serious about drinks.
Yeah.
Like before prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And then prohibition happened and it's like somebody waved this don't drink wand over everyone. Everyone got stuck drinking really crappy spirits during prohibition because that's all they could get a hold of. And everybody forgot that there was like something like a good bar that served good drinks with like career cocktail like bartenders.
It was a prestigious, you know, career path to have back then. You know, you were looked at as like, you know, a confidant to mayors and politicians and things like that, you know, pre-prohibition. And then all of a sudden, you know, get to the 1980s and it's like, oh, you're a bartender? So what do you like want to do with your life? What do you really want to do? Yeah. And you're like, come on.
I want to be a your job is basically juggling with drinks.
I want to be a flair tender.
Yeah, exactly.
And make popsicle martinis.
Yeah.
Which is funny, I think, is where
again
thinking really long and hard about this, I think that the movement, the craft cocktail movement, had to get like overly serious and kind of hipstery to identify itself and set itself apart from this wild, crazy sort of 90s sophomoric
martini bars.
People always throw around
that happened, you know, that everybody was like ashamed of in this way. And so I think it was a backlash, but it also made it really hard to get out from under this snooty sort of.
The pendulum always will swing really, really far one way and then get back, and then somehow it just takes a little bit of time and then it corrects itself and finds, you know, itself in the middle somewhere. I feel like we're finally back in the middle somewhere in 2020.
No, definitely. Like, you know. And I think people still hear craft cocktails sometimes and think, ugh, there's going to be that guy twirling his little long mustache at the bar, like sneering at me. And overall, they're wrong.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, when we were opening Whale, you know, Dan and I were spending like 20 hours a day in that space just doing things and talking and, you know, game planning and trying to just attack this new venture as best we can. And we were talking about the idea of like, eventually we're going to have to tell someone that we're doing this. And I think, you know, we've been in the industry forever. So a lot of people already kind of knew, but like, we have to tell that to someone. And then that someone's going to tell it to a bunch of people. And then like, we have to make sure that we land in a good area. And the, one of the first things that Dan and I had talked about was like, we are going to do as best we can to never say the words craft cocktail ever.
Because
I think at that time, it was still like at the tail end of, you know, like maybe this craft cocktails thing is going to be pretentious, or this new thing is going to be snooty or only for date nights or whatever.
Or this, this exclusive club where it's like, oh, you're ordering that drink, you simpleton.
Yeah, exactly.
We always wanted to be a neighborhood bar. So like for us, it was, we wanted to you know, diffuse any possibilities of, you know, turning people off before they ever walked in our door.
Which to like our detriment, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. So we could have opened a bakery and people would have been talking about craft cocktails because that's what we did. You know, like that's,
we fought as, that's as what best we did. Could, yeah. And it was a battle that was lost within the first 90 days of us being open. Because everyone was like, you're the craft cocktail dudes from this place and this place. Yeah. And we're like,
Yes, that's us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then luckily, you know, we put a cocktail in a jolly good soda can and people can kind of realize right away that we're not really pretentious. We'll make a lot of dick jokes and I'll always have a sweater on and then you just keep going.
You'll find me in a baseball cap and a hoodie behind the bar. Yeah. You know, we don't take ourselves seriously. Well, we may take our craft seriously. We don't take ourselves seriously, which is find the best way to do anything these days.
Yeah. Well, and I think everybody has gone through, everybody in the craft cocktail world has kind of gone through this.
I mean, about that so much.
People go to Bittercube and I think they're shocked by like how
laid back and fun they are.
I mean, this is not, no. I mean, the twirly mustaches are cute, but
You
know. Yeah, if you can rock one or grow one, I can't. I'll hit puberty one day, guys. It's fine.
Someday. I'll be there for you.
Hey, man.
Just drink more coffee, Dan.
I'm trying.
It's just always hard, especially I think in a place like Wisconsin and Milwaukee where, you know, people, I think sometimes we can get so locked in on like what certain things are. I mean, Red Light Ramen, when that opened and everyone was just like, you can't sell ramen for that price. I can get 99 cent ramen. Like, it's just like sometimes we get a little defensive about being told to do something better. Or we are immediately like, oh, it's pretentious. Get that out of here.
Yeah. Maybe not even better, just different.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
But I also think that's part of what has allowed Milwaukee to grow in the last probably 10 years is that people have started to let go of that. We know how this should be and everything should be meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the Wisconsin old fashioned is the only old fashioned. And, you know, like, I think people are letting go of that and being like, no, you know, cool. New stuff could be cool. Yeah.
Well, there's been a few times that like we've had to make that realization of, because we started when it was starting here in Milwaukee, you know, we constantly have this thing in the back of our mind that like people aren't going to like what we do or don't want to pay those prices or whatever it is. So, I mean, just recently, I think the best example is in our most recent menu, we have a section for classic cocktails because we thought that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of other things that go into that, but we thought that offering people the idea of ordering a Moscow Mule was important because then they wouldn't feel as if, you know, they were stuck ordering something they didn't know every single ingredient in it and, you know, it was going to taste bad, but they're paying $10 for it or whatever it is. And then we put this menu together and we sell almost none of them. People are coming to Whale to experience something that they maybe haven't yet or just like that already and want more of it. So we're seeing our seasonal drinks, the ones that are...
So people would rather say it like your riffs.
Yeah, exactly. They like the weirdness shit that we do. Yeah, exactly. Which was a realization for me because we battled against it for 10 years of like, yeah, the Wisconsin old fashioned is really good and I drink a lot of them, but like... We can also make something else.
Yeah, exactly. We can do a bunch of other cocktails. I think for us, with the classics list on our menu now too, I feel like the conversation that we had before we put it out in the summer, because we added it for the winter menu, was like, you know, we have people come in on the weekends, maybe from out of town, you know, North Shore or whatever, and they see our menu and maybe there's nothing on there that resonates with them. You know what I mean? Like it's just too out there or it's too whatever, which definitely happens and we totally get it. And then they're like, can you make a Manhattan? Can you do that? And we're like, yeah, we can make you any classic.
You look right at them and you say, no, we're far too fancy.
Yeah.
Far too fancy.
I'm twirling my mustache.
But it was just that thing where for us, we thought, oh, maybe for the average consumer, like an average meaning, you know, just someone who goes out and isn't in this industry, they don't correlate you have a cocktail menu, so therefore you can also do classics. Mm-hmm. And we're like, let's give them a list of classics that we think are awesome that we want to do. And then we found out Nope. like no, they literally are here for that thing. Yeah. And the ones that want a Manhattan just want a Manhattan. Yeah. And these other classics, they're just like, that's fine. That's, but like, what's the one with the Jolly Good Can? Yeah. And we're like, okay, yeah, back to that. Cool.
Well, I wonder if that's like a comfort blanket for some people who are going there and maybe only know the classics, but seeing that you guys have them on the menu and knowing that you can make them makes them feel a little bit more comfortable being like, okay, I know they've got a baseline here.
Yeah.
So let me, I can explore knowing that.
We can always go back to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, knowing that you know how to do that. That sure. It's not like, oh, well, can you make a Manhattan? Well, it's on the menu. Yes, we can. Yeah. So maybe you should trust us with these other weird things.
That was a little bit of a conversation we ended up having after the fact as well, where we're like, well, I think, yeah, when people see those other 10 drinks and they're like, oh, there's a foundation here, they've educated themselves, they're nerds. Let's give them a shot and try their seasonal stuff and do that thing. And then, you know, if that doesn't work out, we can always go back to that other thing. But
we also sell a shit ton of White Claw.
Oh yeah.
You know, shots of Fernet, the whole thing.
It fought the year for a bit. 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. Real quick. We do have the phrase, because my life is dope and I do dope shit
on our menu.
And that's the section for White Claws and like all the RTD stuff.
Plain Spokes on there.
Because you should come and you should have a really nice, crazy, weird cocktail. But then also like you can't have that all night.
You'll die.
Yeah, it's not going to be great. It's not going to be great.
No, kidding.
Which brings us actually to another thing I kind of want to cover, because the other thing that bars everywhere did not have on their menus forever were things like mocktails.
And
I think it's funny because I would always tell people, I was part of this problem for a while. I would tell people, I'm like, any good cocktail bar can make you a great mocktail,
all the ingredients,
a non-alcoholic
are there.
Something like they have everything. Just tell them what kind of flavors you like and they'll do the same as they would do for a cocktail.
Yeah.
But the thing is, nobody wants to have a conversation with the bartender about the fact that they're not drinking in Milwaukee.
They feel like they're going to be shamed out of the bar.
I don't need to put this like front and center and be like, can you make me something without any of that stuff in
Is that just a Wisconsin thing too? That Wisconsin's
it's everywhere.
It's
everywhere. I think it's to a greater or lesser extent. I think we have...
We sell these
a lot more...
We sell these pins from a non-profit called Pim Project, which is a friend of ours, Didi Psyche, who lives in San Francisco now and is the GM of Bourbon and Branch there. And they got a grant from Tales of the Cocktail and to do this Pim Project. And the pin is basically like a nonverbal way of saying, I'm not drinking tonight. And it's either if you're an industry person and you don't want to take shots during your shift or whatever, you can wear it, or just a regular human can wear it when they're going out. And they're trying to get it within the bar culture, so that way when bartenders see it, they know that person's not drinking. You can hand them an NA cocktail menu. You can do whatever. And you don't have to have that weird, awkward conversation if you don't want to.
Confessional of like,
exactly.
Which is weird because that person is the most responsible person of the night.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
But they're the one being like, I'm so sorry. I'm going to be responsible tonight.
I had one person one time come up to me and like grab the back of my arm like while I was behind the bar. And like, number one, as a bartender, like, don't do that. Don't grab the bartender. That's weird. But anyways, like this woman like whispers in my ear like, hey, I'm not drinking tonight. Can you get me a seltzer with a lime on it? And then just say it out loud that I ordered a gin and tonic because I don't want my friends to know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. Like, of course, like, good for you. Thank you for being responsible. But also like, who cares? Like, you're out with your friends to create memories with the people you love.
You might need better friends.
Yeah, exactly.
One gin and tonic for the fun drinking lady.
That's what I should have done, damn it. But like, yeah, I mean, and just because you're not drinking doesn't mean that the bartender or someone shouldn't give you as much attention as someone who is drinking. Like, if we have the skill set, like, let's do it. Like, it's like if you have an allergy at a restaurant, because you have an allergy, which probably isn't your fault, you should still be able to have a good meal when you go out. I just think it's very important.
And it was interesting. We talked to the New York Times, one of the cocktail writers there. I'm spacing out his
name. Oh, yeah.
Robert Simonson.
And he talked. He touched on this a little bit because we had him try his first White Claw.
I listened to that. It was incredible.
So good.
You guys thought I was joking. So I love your guys' podcast. It's great.
Yeah. But he also talked about how he was like, he's not sure if he should cover mocktails, because he's like, does it even count as a bar/alcohol beat subject? Like, am I just
he had a really interesting point
on juice, essentially.
I never thought about it from his perspective. Like when I heard it out loud the first time, I was like, yeah, like, of course, like, yes, do that. But I think the way that Robert phrased it was like, well, they just go to the store or like, you know, like,
yeah.
However he put it kind of made it seem like, you know, something else. And I was like, well, that's a really interesting point. But like, you know, we've you know, we just want everyone, doesn't matter what the situation is, we just want them to feel comfortable and appreciated whenever they step into our bar. So to us, that involves mocktails and all that stuff. And like, just January is always pretty rough for bars and restaurants anyways. And then, so we just do what we're supposed to do and make really elaborate, really cool mocktails so the people that aren't drinking can still come in and have a good time. And our business isn't necessarily affected that way.
Which I really think that was such poor planning on the part of the whole dry January.
It's insane. Yeah, I think that was Robert's actually, I think that's what he was saying.
Well, and it's been interesting. Timing-wise. I think people have varying feelings. I mean, I'm not against the concept of like going dry, being sober curious.
No, not at all.
Quitting drinking.
I do it all the time. Yeah.
But I do think it's funny because dry January has almost become a weird snooty thing.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
Like people feel pressured to do it. And I keep thinking like, let's do this in like, I don't know, April.
Yeah. How about September?
Let's just have dry April, dry September, something. One of the months that's not completely killing the industry. Already, because people don't go out, at least in Midwestern states where it's cold.
It was interesting. I've started dating somebody, and we started dating during.
Tell me more. I'm so very happy for you.
That wasn't a humble brag. I wasn't trying to be like, "Hello, world. I am a social butterfly."
But, have you been to Mexico?
Yeah. But we were.
I'm holding hands with her right now.
Surprise! It's me.
She hasn't said a word this entire podcast, but. But no, she was doing dry January, and it was admittedly kind of hard to figure out like, okay, what can you do socially in Milwaukee and Wisconsin that doesn't involve drinking?
Nothing.
Not a
single thing.
Yeah. And it was really hard. And luckily she.
Go to the zoo and you're pounding beers with your kids. Like I've seen it. Yeah.
And like we ended up finding places that had kombucha, which, you know, finding places with like at least something a little less potent. And that worked. But it was still like you'd have to like think and you'd have to be like, okay, well, what places have kombucha? And it was a lot more of a thought process.
Yeah.
Than over the past half month, this is in the middle of February now, where it's like, oh, where are we gonna go? Oh,
anywhere.
Yeah, like, exactly.
The book just opened massively as soon as it turned February. And I think that's I'm glad to see that the mocktails are kind of opening up bars.
Because I feel like it should not be that hard.
No, it's like you can go to a bar and not just have to drink water.
Yeah.
We've got every citrus juice, we've got complex syrups, we've got all these things
purees,
behind the bar. There's no reason.
You have all these things. You get to the point now where it's not new, right? This is like the second or third one, like where it's like well known at this point. And as business owners, I mean, you know, it's a capitalist thing. So you look at it and you go, well, I know this is coming. I know this is going to happen. It's my job as a business owner to make sure I have something available for this clientele and get it out there and let that clientele know that we have it and that it exists. And as long as you do that thing and you put out a good product, I think that's partly a big reason of why like we didn't really see much of a slowdown at Whale in January. We were very lucky that like January and this first part of February have actually been very busy for us. And
I don't know why you have to say that out loud because it's all gone down.
Yeah, yeah, it's over. All right. Well, we can just light the place on fire and get back. It's fine.
You guys didn't hear that.
Jokes. City of Milwaukee jokes. it's your job to go out and make sure you have products that people want to buy, right? Yeah. I mean, like at the end of the day, we just kind of took the approach where we were like, well, instead of being upset about it, you know, and being like, well, this is one more thing that we have to do on top of everything else that we do. We were like, how can we do this in our way make it fun and put out good products and just do that.
And so much of the battle is making people feel comfortable. You talked about this, Lori, when we talked way back when about restaurants closing in Milwaukee and how one of the biggest things that restaurants just want in a lot of cases is come by and sit at the bar and yeah. like have a drink.
Yeah,
and like
for sure.
They would much rather have patrons coming in, but a lot of people feel like, oh, if I go into the restaurant, they're gonna be mad at me that I'm like taking up space and I'm
or I have to drop $75. Or yeah, I'm not,
that's not the case
totally
at all.
Totally not true.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like that with bars where it's just like. It's fine to come here and not want to drink too, and we have options for you. And the more comfortable people get with that, the better off the whole industry, I think, would be.
I mean, because bars are social spaces.
Well,
bars
started as space, right?
Yeah, like,
yeah, exactly,
spaces.
Exactly.
Like, you know, and bars now. I mean, like bars have gotten fancy. 90% of the bars in the world have like food now.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
we almost
missed
can't
the boat
open.
On, apparently,
yeah.
you have a food truck.
My Ophelia's comes every Thursday.
Yeah.
If anyone out there hasn't had it, you should come. Their food
what
is incredible.
Was that, by the way.
This last week?
Yes.
It was like their
trap
vegan.
Wrap?
Yeah, they call it a trap wrap. It's a vegan crunch wrap.
Okay.
I got three.
Of a crunch wrap, but there was like macaroni and cheese in it.
Yeah, potatoes. And I think there
three
was
different kinds,
like some crunchy chips in there too, or something like that.
It was dumb.
I got three of them.
Do you
and
still
it was
have
incredible.
One of them? And can you give it to me now?
Ooh, tough. I ate them immediately.
Yeah.
I stacked three on top of each other and just
tell
ate
them
it like
to
a
do
burger.
It. Tell them to do it again, please.
I mean, one of our bartenders left their day job and rushed to Lost Whale on Thursday.
Yeah.
And like just because she's a vegan and like literally came and like bought one just to take home and then like put it up on Instagram and was like, haha, got one. Yeah, it was super funny.
Yeah.
But they're delicious.
Awesome.
Do we want to call it
silence?
Literally talk
forever,
for hours.
Yeah, hours.
We warned people about a 22-hour podcast.
I have stopped at Lost Whale, and you know, 3 hours later.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah, we black out, and then we just like, what happened? And then it's
talks about
later.
A lot of stuff.
And I've come out caffeinated, and
we do a good job of that too.
And Japanese.
Highballed?
Seltzer, Japanese highball to death.
Oh my God, that thing is addicting.
My daughter got out of school today and did not want to leave. And my original plan was to go to Whale, we have like these little like 6 ounce soda bottles. And I was going to try to put some highballs in there for you guys. But because my daughter is an a-hole, I didn't have enough time. So I will give them to you shortly. But I wanted to bring some because they're the best things ever. If you haven't had one, you gotta have
them. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm
going to corral you guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to do a thing on that crazy Japanese highball machine.
Yeah.
Because I really felt like it was going to burn my taste buds off.
It's crazy.
Carbonation level is insane. Yeah.
It's like up here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely talk about that.
Yeah.
Again.
That'd be awesome.
For now.
Nice.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. This is super
really
fun.
Awesome.
Thanks
You're
for
delightful.
Coming in. Thank you for your frozen two takes.
Of course. I'm glad I was
thank
correct.
Thank you for your general bar takes.
Yeah.
Hey.
Thank you for letting us.
We do what we can.
Oh, no.
Expose your bar.
He's dying.
Matt.
No, Matt.
Soup down the wrong pipe, man. It happens.
It was a chive. It was a rogue chive. Thanks for letting us expose your old band.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're going to get 7 clicks now. In the
Spotify streams up to 22.
Yeah, it's going
to
be amazing.
Dan's royalty check's going to be a penny.
I'm pretty sure I own
one at this point. The podcast is huge in Japan. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
They'll totally know what we're
talking about.
You're going to blow up. You're going to blow up.
Right in the house on the market.
I can't believe that Danny Berry's is on the podcast.
Danny Berry's. Woo!
Yeah. Oh, Danny Berry's.
Oh, man.
Oh, this is not going to live.
Danny Berry's.
This is not going to leave you.
I feel like I should be in like a jazz fusion band.
Danny Berry's.
You holding a clarinet like in a suit. Like it's Danny Berry's.
Coming up, Danny Berry's. Yeah.
Standing next to Michael Bubbly.
Oh, God. Michael Bubbly.
That was amazing.
Well, thank you guys again
so much.
Thanks
for having
us. Where can people find Lost Whale?
Well, you mean the actual physical space?
Physically and digitally.
I was going to say both.
And metaphysically.
Metaphysically. Ooh, in your hearts, first of all.
Yeah.
Secondly, 2151 South Kinnickinnick Avenue in Bayview. And then online at Lost Whale MKE.
On all social media
and lostwellmke.com for
because somebody was smart when they designed their social media.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Milwaukee. I'm just kidding. Just joking.
So
good.
Awesome.
Signing off.
Thank you guys.
Head on over
there. Thank you.
Yeah. Say hello to Danny Berry. And
Danny Berry's will be on his computer tonight.
We didn't make fun of Trip
at work
nearly.
I don't know how
Even
I got so lucky,
you have
but
the best. See, I think your name is already
that cool.
Tripper,
yeah.
Trip, yeah.
Yeah,
it,
yeah.
We made fun of his name. We forced him into Frozen you know. Two Takes. So yeah. I think it was fair.
It's true. That's
fair. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll flip it next time.
I feel great. Yeah.
I'm only calling you Danny Berries now forever.
Hey, man.
I'm afraid so.
Whatever you got to do to get my attention, it's fine.
He's playing at right. the Miramar tonight.
Yeah. 2009.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Bye.
And that brings us to a completely new segment. You may be expecting the sparkling water second, but we got something even more exciting this week. It is Bar Week, Bar Month, at On Milwaukee. And we on the Food Crush podcast are celebrating it ourselves with a new segment. This is the Spirited Second, brought to you by Bitter Cube Bar and Bazaar. And we have another bonus special guest with us. Lori, please introduce our bonus special guest.
We do. This is Brandon Reyes, who is the bar manager and the research and development manager for Bitter Cube Bar.
As he called himself,
Bitter Cube and Bitter Cube Bar and Bazaar.
He called himself the Bar and D manager, which is yes. the best title I can
Bar
possibly
and D.
fathom.
And much shorter than so. What I just said.
Yeah. So these segments, Lori, yeah. what are these segments going to be, these spirited seconds?
So Brandon's going to enlighten us about a different spirit each week. For at exciting. Least 3 weeks.
This is very exciting. So what is our first beverage of choice?
I brought some vermouth.
Ooh. See, this is very popular these days, correct? Laura, you were talking about this, how vermouth is kind of the sexy new alcohol. Not new alcohol.
I think it's
vermouth's
not new.
Been around yeah. for a while. But this is an alcohol that people are starting to get into and is starting to grow in trendiness.
Yes. Brandon. talk about why is vermouth, I'll say back, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
And what do we need to know about it?
Well, I think a big reason why it's trending is that bartenders have been showing people how to use it and take care of it, because for a long time, it was and still is somewhat relatively not thought of as being a wine product. And so it's a lot of times not cared for in that way. So
how do they irresponsibly take care of it?
Leaving it out on the shelf overnight and letting it spoil.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, it can spoil.
Because vermouth at its heart is a fortified mm-hmm. wine.
Aromatized. So there's different categories of fortified wine. So a fortified wine would be like a sherry or a port. And then pushing that even further, instead of just adding a spirit to fortify the wine with, you're now adding sugar and botanicals.
So you're getting a really different flavor profile.
Correct. With
mm-hmm. Now, we are drinking our vermouth today out of a very interesting glass. It looks kind of like a hollow pushpin, I would say.
Yeah.
It's like a shot glass up top, and then it rounds out at the bottom, and then it's got stemware. But it's very interesting. What is the purpose of this shape?
So this shape condenses the aromatics. And so the bulb at the bottom allows you to swirl, and then the concentrated cylindrical top part of it concentrates Ooh. The aromatics.
It's very potent when you take a smell. It's not like, I mean, wine has a smell to it too, but this has like a real punchiness to it. You're getting a full whiff.
What you smell, Matt?
A little cherry, maybe? Am I smelling a little bit of cherry? Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think you can necessarily be wrong.
Lori, you've never met my palate. You'd be amazed. Grilled cheese?
Smells
like grilled cheese. Anyone else getting grilled cheese on this?
So what kind of vermouth are we tasting today?
Oh, it's much sweeter than I expected.
Yeah.
That is potently sweet. I was not prepared for that. But I like it. I'm happy about it.
It's Carpano Antico. And so this particular variety was arguably the first vermouth to be mass produced and marketed and packaged for sale.
Oh, wow. Is that 1786
in all of the world?
That I'm seeing on the label?
1786, yep. That's when Benedetto Carpano invented this style of vermouth, which was something that a lot of people were making to some form or fashion at that time. We'd already gone through a period of a few periods of popularity in making wormwood wine, which is where vermouth originates from. I believe the ancient Greeks were...
Which was probably, was that a medicinal?
Yeah, for sure.
Product?
Yeah, it was the ancient Greeks were the first to create a wine and administer it in a medicinal manner using wormwood.
Okay. The Greeks don't like their yogurt, but I like their alcohol approach to alcohol.
So, and were they after the, you know, because wormwood then got a bad reputation.
Yeah.
When people were ingesting too much of it and having, you know, visions.
There is an active compound.
Hallucinogenic.
That can be toxic at high doses.
Oh, hey now.
Yeah. So
I assume we're not doing that.
No. Not right now.
I mean, but wormwood was the reason why absinthe was banned for years and years. Mm-hmm.
And then Moulin Rouge came out and absinthe was legalized again, as we all know.
right.
Classic history of alcohols.
So what were they getting at with vermouth? Like, why do we shove a bunch of herbs and things into wine? Was it purely medicinal at first, and do you know when did it switch over and become?
I think about this time period in the 18th century. So botanicals, exotic ingredients start to become more accessible. So instead of only being accessible to the hyper elite, more middle class people can afford to drink a wormwood wine. And so this was also around the time of this cafe culture blossoming in Italy. And wormwood wines and similar products being trendy at the time, you started to see a lot of their experimentation. People were coming up with their own recipes. And so this guy, Benedetto Carpano, was doing exactly that at the time. And he was particularly inspired by German poetry. I forget the name of the exact poet, but there was mention in a poem of his about vermouth, and he chose this name to call the product instead of something in Italian.
Interesting. Hmm. So an Italian vermouth was inspired by a German word. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it vermouth? Which is like, yeah.
Vermouth.
Fascinating. And how is this, like, this is coming back as not only, like, people are sipping vermouth again.
I don't think you could swig this. Like, this isn't something you can knock back. It's such a potent flavor that you have to... I think you can only go sips at a time. Or am I wrong on that? Are there people
I would challenge that notion.
Okay.
At the Bitter Cube Bar, we definitely drink a lot of vermouth shots.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we even have a particular variety of vermouth shot.
See, this is why we brought you in, Brandon, to correct my misgivings and inaccuracies.
But so listen to this, because you need to go. Yes, the vermouth shots at Bitter Cube Bar are pretty amazing.
We cancel out all of the elegance in drinking vermouth by adding tiny popping boba bubbles to the shot, and we call it a burster. It's very not elegant. You shoot the shot, and then you pop the bubbles.
And you get, like, this beautiful floral, and relatively, like, most shots are really, really,
like,
spirited,
a liquid gusher.
I guess. Like, heftier spirits. He's drinking sparkling water.
Sorry, I just splashed myself with sparkling
on his glasses.
Water.
But it's kind of a lighter shot, and then you get the delight of the
The especially when we're bartending. You know, people want to have a drink with us. Vermouth is a classic bartender shot, so that you're not over-serving yourself behind the bar.
Yeah, because the ABV
right
is closer to wine.
Yeah, like I can still do my job if I have a shot of vermouth.
Yeah.
And how else is this? How else do you guys use this? And or how can people out there, like, if you want to get into vermouth, what's the best entree into that?
Manhattan, I think, especially around these parts, is probably the most known cocktail that calls for vermouth. And I think a lot of people, or rather, nowadays, the more classic recipe for a Manhattan is more parts of whiskey to the vermouth. But originally, it was an equal parts recipe. So this was invented when vermouth was gaining popularity in the United States. And this was also around the time when, what do they call it? Theater saloons was the name of the first like craft cocktail places, and where craft cocktails kind of started to become a movement. And yeah, the Manhattan was one of these original recipes that incorporated vermouth, because before then, a cocktail was just booze, sugar, water, bitters for the most part.
Interesting.
And this is, and we're talking sweet vermouth here.
Yeah.
As opposed to dry vermouth.
Right. I think I remember correctly. For dry vermouth, 30 grams of sugar or less. And for sweet vermouth, 100 per liter.
Okay.
30 grams of sugar per liter or less for a dry vermouth, and 130 and
or more
for sweet vermouth.
Yeah.
Per liter.
So, yeah. So, two distinct different kinds. So, what you're going to find in a Manhattan is a sweet vermouth.
Right.
Versus like a martini.
Yeah. And you could definitely make a Manhattan with dry vermouth. And this is up to your own preferences. If you like a drier cocktail, you could do a half part of dry vermouth, a half part of sweet. I feel like if you used all dry, it might be a different cocktail. I don't know off the top of my head, yeah, if that makes a different drink.
There we go. I don't know. My grandfather used to order Manhattans very dry with an olive. I don't know what that meant, but I've done it before at bars because, you know, when people that you know drink things and you're like, oh, I'll try that.
Yeah,
sure.
That becomes your way. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this maiden spirited second brought to you by Bitter Cube Bar and Bazaar. Brandon Reyes, we will be talking with you more each episode and learning more about unique alcohols that maybe you don't know that much about. So by you, I don't mean you, Brandon Reyes, because I meant you, like, listeners.
Brandon knows more than most of us.
You were staring at me.
I was looking at you all saying, yeah, like, you don't know anything about Campari. But yeah. No, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to Bitter Cube Bar and Bazaar for feeding us alcohol today. And that was the first time of our new segment, Sparkling Water Second. We will return to you in April, probably.
Yes.
Yeah. But don't worry, everyone, though that segment is no longer with us temporarily, we are still food porning it up. Lori, what's on the menu today?
On the menu today is a piece by Jane Kenyon called Man Eating.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know if I should say man eating or man eating.
Man eating.
But I think it's about a man who is eating.
I believe it's pronounced man eating.
Man eating. Manito.
Hey, hey! I think that's the name of my doctor, actually.
Yes.
I don't know if that's information I should put out there. Lori, feel free to read this week's food pornography.
The man at the table across from mine is eating yogurt. His eyes, following the progress of the spoon, cross briefly each time it nears his face. Time and the world with all its principalities might come to an end as prophesied by the Apostle John. But what about this man, so completely present to the little carton with its cool, sweet food? which has caused no animal to suffer, and which he is eating with a pearl white plastic spoon.
Go-Gurt. Now I really want yogurt. I have to admit, I'm not a huge yogurt person in general. I used to have a lot of Go-Gurt when I was a kid. And my mom would freeze the Go-Gurts. She would put the tubes in the freezer, so they would basically be like creamy popsicles. And then I would have those, do you remember those Yoplait whips? Where it was like a light, it was like foamy yogurt.
No.
They were very good. They were light and creamy. There was a key lime pie that was very tasty.
Which is funny because Yoplait was always a lighter, fluffier yogurt.
Yeah.
Now a French-style yogurt.
Yeah, now they've all jumped on the Greek yogurt bandwagon. And
which just
I
means
am
you're
not
getting
a Greek yogurt person.
No?
No, that stuff tastes like actual cleaning products to me. Yeah, that's bad. That is food that's gone bad, and they've repackaged it. And I'm sorry, Greece, but I much more appreciate the Olympics and the democracy that you gave the earth, not
the
yogurt.
Maybe we'll have to. I think there's a way to get you to like Greek yogurt. Depends what kind of Greek yogurt you're eating.
Maybe we're not going to have a sparkling water second. Yeah. We'll have a Greek yogurt minute.
I think it's kind of funny because Greek yogurt originally a beautiful full fat yogurt product mm-hmm. that was just like thicker. Like what you should have noticed between like American style or French style yogurt and Greek yogurt is that it was like thick and really creamy. Like
I just noticed the flavor just, it was so bitter and so tart and not in a good way.
More yogurty. See, but yogurt is actually tart. And most of the yogurt, like the Yoplaits and the Danons of the world, are quite possibly not even yogurt anymore.
Oh, really?
Because there are living. You actually have to check the label because they're yogurt-esque things. But if there's no living cultures in it, it's not yogurt. But they've.
I don't want to eat living cultures. I don't think I like yogurt.
Living cultures are good for you. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyways. So. Yeah. I prefer to not eat cultures.
Oh.
Weird sentence, but... Lori, where can people find you eating cultures on the internet?
I always eat cultures. I eat as many cultures as I can.
This
people
is true.
People can find me at Lo Frederick on all of the social medias. Except maybe
even
TikTok, because I haven't gone there.
No, and I don't want to be on TikTok.
I occasionally watch the people dance.
The NBA... Is that all TikTok? I feel like TikTok is just a dancing app.
No, there's people cooking, there's people dancing. I mean, there's some themes. There are people applying makeup. There's people cooking and dancing.
This all sounds awful. They for the recent NBA All-Star game, they had a bunch of TikTokers take over the NBA official TikTok. Mm-hmm. It was awful. It was the worst. I don't want to sound like an old man yelling at a cloud.
But you always do.
But TikTok has to be destroyed. Sorry. Vine ran so TikTok could crappily dance.
So you're not on TikTok?
No.
But where are you?
Oh, nice segue. Yeah. You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. And if Vine still existed, you could find me on Vine. But unfortunately, Vine is no longer with us. Rest in peace, Vine.
And the podcast you can also find in the usual places,
yep.
Anywhere podcasts can be found, and at Food Crush Pod. On all of the channels.
On all of them, except for TikTok. And for Vine, because Vine doesn't exist and TikTok is for children. Hey, Lori, thanks for a great episode, as always.
Likewise.
And thank you to you all out there for listening. And, as always, keep cooking. Or drinking, in this case.